Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's webinar on strategies for having difficult conversations. This is the most highly attracted webinar that we've had in the entire year. It's something that obviously people feel very strongly about and are eager to find tools and approaches to address it. And that's why we're delighted to be with you as the ICMA coaching program. We're pleased to have ICMARC as the platinum sponsor. ICMARC is delighted to be doing this because they are a proud supporter of the ICMA coaching program, recognizing the everyday heroes who make our communities great. ICMARC, building public sector retirement security. We also appreciate the gold sponsors, ICMA and Cal-ICMA, and we're delighted to have 26 state association coaching partners. They help us in identifying topics and helping to identify presenters. The presenters that you have today came from their suggestions, and we've been working closely with them to prepare today's webinar for you and have it be of maximum value. You'll also see that we have a great group of outreach partners. These are helping us to make sure that we're reaching as diverse and inclusive a community as possible, both within ICMA community and people who hopefully will be attracted to join ICMA because of the many benefits that it offers, like these webinars and professional development and ethics and other things that are critical to the success of people in their careers in this important profession. So let me just talk very briefly about the outline for today's session and what you'll be hearing about topics from our key presenters. We're going to be looking at the trouble local government professionals and what are effective techniques. There isn't just one tool that fits all. You'll see different ones, and be providing you a whole set of resources and practice tools that you can be using to build your skills in doing this more effectively. And to do this, we've got Robert Bizat. He's a former city manager in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois. You'll see his bio in detail in the agenda packet. But he's written the book Character-Based Management. Actually, in the agenda packet, he's kindly shared a chapter from that book that's most relevant to the issue of having tough conversations. So we encourage you to get the overview that he's going to give you about how to address these topics. Then we're going to move to current practitioners. David Ellis, a deputy county manager in Wake, North Carolina. David just recently won an award, a scholarship award for the Kennedy School of Government, and so congratulate him on that. And he's going to be talking about how he puts these different conversations into practice. And in fact, assuming we have time, he and I are going to model, unrehearsed, a conversation that would be of interest to you. So we're going to ask you a question, which one is of most interest to you? And if some of you send us scenarios, we'll be very interested in looking at some of those scenarios and how to help you with that. And then LaSheila Yates, who's the Executive Director and Chief Diversity Officer in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, has a great background. I encourage you to read about her as well in the agenda packet. But she's been at the forefront of volunteerism and helping to connect communities and local government and to do that in effective ways. And she's going to be talking about what to do, you know, when difficult conversations just aren't working. And she's got some great mediation skills and experiences to share with you. So that's going to be our basic plan. And I'm Don Maruska, the director of the ICMA coaching program and author of Take Charge of Your Talent, and delighted that all of you have joined us today. So I'm going to go to a polling question here. Now, we're always eager to encourage groups because we think that you can learn a lot as groups and bring these ideas back to your organization in an effective way. So take a moment to let us know how many people are there at your location. And we're pleased to have so many of you with us. I see a number of questions that have already come in, people asking about the handout location. I'll just explain that again. If you look at the GoToWebinar control panel on that you logged into, you'll see a section called handouts. If you click that, you'll be able to then download a PDF of today's presentation materials and the agenda packet and resource materials. It's also available at icma.org/coachingwebinars, and you click on agendas and archives, and you'll see today's materials there. We'll also be highlighting all this to you in the follow-up emails that you'll be getting from today's session. So no worries about finding those and getting those covered effectively. So let's just take a look and see what we're at in terms of groups and group size here. It looks like we have three quarters of you coming in from just on your own, and the rest of you in groups of various sizes, including some of over 20. And I know I heard the groups of up to 30 and more that were identifying this as something they wanted to be doing together as a team. So we're delighted that all of you are with us, and we're going to jump right in to the rest of the material here. So let me get focused here on our presenter, Bob Bizet, and get him all set up to carry us forward. So Bob, if you would, please guide the team in some orientation here to how to approach difficult conversations and what you've learned and resources that you're offering for them.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to focus on three types of difficult conversations, which I'm sure we've all had. We've all worked with angry, upset citizens. We've worked with elected officials who have conflicts between themselves and sometimes with us as managers. And then performance evaluation is something that I think is challenging for us as managers. But before getting into those specifics, I just want to talk about our character a little bit, because I think it makes a difference on, let me see if I get this moving.
I'll help it get started for you. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. I guess basically from the years I've been involved as a manager or a consultant, I think it's really important that who we are is just as important as the techniques we use. In fact, I think our character is the most important thing. People make judgments about us, and when we converse with people or we manage people, and I think it's important that to improve our character, we can also improve our techniques. And open and honest communication with the people we manage is one of the most important factors in the success of an organization. That's something, again, having worked with maybe 350 different organizations, mostly municipal across the country, if we're not open and honest with people, they don't trust us. And on the next slide there, people do have to trust us. I think all of us can spot a phony pretty quickly. I've worked with a number over the years. Some of them were my elected officials, some were my department heads. But people can say one thing. If they don't do what they say they're going to do, well, we know pretty quickly that they're not somebody that can be trusted. And also, people can tell if you are really listening to them, really care about them, and care about their issue. Having done all kinds of supervisory management training over the years, people ask me, have things changed as far as supervisors and managers are concerned on whether or not you're really listening or care about them? Years ago, people were always shuffling on their papers on their desks if they were talking to you and didn't really care. Then they were looking at their computer screens if they were talking to you and not that interested, and now they have their cell phones in front of them or their iPhones, and they're looking at that. So people can tell, and I think it's just important to realize that, that people can make judgments about whether they can trust us. The next one, I just like to look at learning about things, because I think that's so important to having conversations that actually result in something that gets something done. And I think in this polarized world, it's good to look at things on kind of a continuum. As you're looking at the screen, on the right side is I have complete knowledge of something. On the left side, I know hardly anything. There's not a whole lot of things I know 100%. I know I'm alive. I know I'm going to die. I made a presentation on this to one group, municipal people. They said, well, you're going to pay taxes too. So I said, okay, there's three things I'm 100% sure about. Down at the bottom end, there's lots of things I know hardly anything about. And I think one thing to keep in mind when we're having conversations of any type, but particularly difficult, challenging ones, is our knowledge is probably somewhere in the middle. And if we're going to get anything done, we need to get the best information, the best ideas, and the best experience from everyone who's part of the discussion. And I think if we can do that, we really get a better solution. We build consensus and commitment among the people that are taking part of it. Everyone then, if it's arrived at on a consensus basis, takes responsibility. And I think very importantly, only deal with the problem once. And I know when we're dealing with problems, sometimes we're under a great deal of pressure. I just always, if I got a little time, I'm always looking to invest some time so I don't have to come back and deal with the problem again. And so again, to get the best knowledge from everybody and get people talking and coming up with a consensus solution is something I'm always aiming for. One of the things when you look at this slide at the bottom, if it weren't for the people, this job would be easy. This is something, I was a young manager in Minnesota back in 1970. I was 28 years old, and I went to my first state manager's conference up in Minneapolis. And at lunchtime, I sat down with an older manager. I thought he was old. He was probably in his 50s, but I was a 28-year-old kid. And I sat down and I asked him, I said, what would you tell somebody like me starting out in the business? And he said, if it weren't for the people, this job would be easy. And I laughed, but he said, yeah, it's something to chuckle about. He said, but it's absolutely true. Everybody you're dealing with, every issue you're dealing with involves people, whether it's the people on your staff, your elected officials, the people in the community, the citizens, the schools, the business. You're always dealing with people. And that's one thing you got to get really good at, and you got to remember that it's always dealing with people. I put the picture of an orchestra up there because I love music, but I have no musical talent. So I go watch other people and listen to other people perform. And I always kind of thought of our job as a manager that we're kind of an orchestra leader. Everybody sitting in that orchestra has probably got more talent than the conductor and whatever their instrument is. But the job of the conductor is to bring everybody together, bring them in harmony, and then present something I think that can be beautiful. And I look at that as our job as a manager is to bring all those resources, all those different talents and skills together to get something done on in a very harmonious way that really is something beautiful. Here's a picture of Einstein, and this is, again, something I read years ago, but I've never forgotten. Somebody asked Einstein to define genius, and since he was a genius, I thought, oh, maybe I better pay attention to this. And the one quote that he came up with at one point, it was the ability to see the connections between things that no one else sees. And of course, he saw the connection between energy, matter, and the speed of light, and it changed the world, still changing the world. And I, from my working with municipalities and organizations all over the place, I'm always looking for those connections that no one else sees, because I want to help each other see those kinds of connections, particularly when we're trying to solve a problem. The next thing is, this is what I have. I probably can't see it too well on here, but I have my calendar book, and I've had a post-it note when I open that for probably 40 years, and it just tells me to shut up and listen, and that's for me, because I think that's the really probably most important key to having a good conversations on difficult topics. Shut up and listen. So I'm always reminding myself of that. And I think it's important just to think a little bit that the difference between hearing and listening. We all hear things all the time, whether we want to or not. We're constantly bombarded with news and advertising and so on. But listening is something that takes practice, and it takes focused attention. And it's not just something that happened. It's something that's, I would consider, an act of the will. We have to make a choice to listen. And so it's good to keep that in mind. When it comes to listening, you've seen these before. But again, I try to keep a sheet like this around me sometimes just to remember. Don't be thinking of counterarguments. I know the first time we start talking with somebody and they've got a problem that we don't agree with, we start thinking about things, why they're wrong, how we can respond to them. But again, I think it's so important to listen to people and really let them tell their story. And I think very important it's to listen to understand what they fear. Most people are angry and upset about something because they fear they're going to lose something. It's going to be hurtful to them, their family, their well-being, whatever. And I'm always listening for that. And I'm listening again a little more deeply because I think the first thing that people say is not always their deepest fear. And once you've been through that, then I think it's important to feed back to them and say, this is what I think you're saying. Am I saying it right? Am I understanding it correctly? So, and again, as I mentioned earlier, it takes time. And I think it's important to keep in mind that a lot of times we feel under pressure to make decisions, but a lot of times we don't have to make them right away. And I think it's good to keep that in mind because, again, I go back to that continuum of knowledge. If I need more information to make a decision, I want to have that time. And I don't think most people get upset with you if you say, okay, I've heard you, I'm concerned and understand, I do need to get more information, and I'll get back to you. Some things you do have to make a decision right away, but I think it's important to keep that in mind. And I think listening takes courage. I've seen so many people kind of afraid to listen to people because that's going to make them look weak or indecisive. And I would just say if you really listen to folks and people know that you're listening to them, you don't look weak or indecisive. Taking input, I think, projects strength and confidence, and that's a good thing to do. And I think it's very important for all of us. I just like that quote earlier, if it weren't for the people, this job would be easy. It's really up to us as the manager to make communication work. We're working with people from all different sectors of the community and within the organization. Our job, I think our main job, is to make communication work up and down and across the board, and it's important to keep that in mind. So dealing with angry, upset citizens, I'm sure you've had them. I've had them tons and tons of time. As I mentioned earlier, I'm listening to hear what they're afraid about. They don't always state it that way, but I'm listening to that because I think that's what motivates a lot of anger and why people are upset about things. And the first thing they say is not always the deepest reason. Sometimes they come around to it. Sometimes you got to ask them questions. Hear their entire story. If somebody gets halfway in their story and you start telling them something different, you've lost them and you're never going to get something resolved. Ask questions. People don't mind being asked questions. I think they really enjoy it because that means you're paying attention to them. And then feedback to them to see if you understand them correctly. And I think at that point, not always, and we're going to get into some mediation issues and other things, but I think once you understand and they know that you know what they're upset about, then you can share your reasons. Usually you're promoting something, the city's doing something because it has some pluses. And I think at that point people are a little more ready to listen. Our elected officials is one example. Another example is I think our primary job as a manager is to build consensus among our elected officials. We do that all the time, and to do that, I think, again, we have to really listen to them. And one of the things, I've been a manager in several cities, but one of the things I learned about executive search when I started doing it, and I probably worked with 250, 300 cities and counties across the country, that's not just bringing in people and candidates for people to interview. It's really a consensus-building decision-making process. And we're always trying to understand what they as a group want and help them listen to each other and help them build a consensus among themselves so when the candidates finally do come, they're able to make a decision. And I just put this on because I always reminds me and makes me laugh. One city I worked with, everybody carried guns. The manager didn't, but the manager had left, but most of the staff did not, but the elected officials did. And when I went in to interview them two at a time to find out what they were looking for, they both came in with guns. And I thought, well, this is interesting. We went through the process. I asked them a lot of questions, and when I left the room, the acting manager came in and said to me, Well, we were a little concerned about putting you in the room with those two guys because they really don't like each other, and they have guns. And I said, well, I'm glad you didn't tell me that ahead of time. But I think it's important to kind of be focusing on, and we'll go to the next slide, please, that I'm always listening to hear what they had in common and asking questions that they both had to respond to in terms of what their goals and hopes were for the community and maybe programs and projects to achieve them. And as I asked those questions and they responded and they listened to each other, it was interesting how much they shared and how much, you know, they might have had different ways to do it, but they heard each other and they came to some consensus already that, well, we have different ideas, but we're not that far apart. And in that particular case with that city, that mayor, the city council voted 3-3 on everything. The mayor had to break the votes. By the time we finished the process, the group was voted 7-0 to hire their new manager, and it stayed that way for about 2.5 years till it was a new election and turnover, and people weren't listening again. But I think one of the things working with my own manager, mayors and council as well, was to, when you get feedback from people and you listen to them, I would always try to use as much of their language as possible, whether it was in written memos or reports or just sitting in and meeting with them, because then they know you've heard them. And again, I have to use my own language as well, but I'm really always thinking about what were they thinking, how did they say it? Because if people hear you saying things kind of the way they did, again, they trust you and they pay attention a little bit more to moving forward. I think we got them. And performance evaluations, the last area, we've all had them. And I always kind of think, because I've done some training with different groups on performance evaluations, always kind of ask the question, would you rather go to the dentist or do a performance evaluation? Most people would probably opt for the dentist. But one thing I try to remember always in doing them myself is that performance evaluation isn't a one-time thing. It's ongoing. And there has to be an ongoing dialogue with whomever you're evaluating. And you really have to care about the employee. And I know that sounds maybe touchy-feely, but really people can tell when you care about them and that you want them to succeed and you want them to do their job well. And I think that's important. That's why I kind of write about this in terms of your character. When times get tough, we act the way we really are deep inside. And I think it's important when we're talking with people to have an ongoing history of caring about them and how they succeed and how they do their job, that you want to bring out the best in them and you want them to help develop their talents and skills. And if you're doing that on an ongoing basis, when it comes to performance evaluation discussions, you're off to a good start anyway. But one of the best things I learned over the years, probably 40 years ago, I was teaching a class at a university in HR management, and one of the people in the class was working for another company, and they mentioned that one of the best things they came across was that if you're doing performance evaluation and somebody's not up to standard, require them to come up with a solution. And I guess I know myself when I was doing performance evaluations, if people weren't performing and you told them that, they kind of get defensive, and then you suggest some things to them that they can do to improve their performance, and they get, again, defensive, and they blame it on somebody else. One of the things, after having some discussion with somebody that they got to improve their performance, they got to come up to standard, is to say, you go back and think about this. I'll see you in 2 days. I want you to think about how you can improve your performance. And then we'll come back, and if there's ways I can help you do that, fine. But it's really going to be up to you to improve your performance. And, again, I'll help you, but I want you to come to me with some ways you're going to do that. And I think that helps that come about. Tapping resources and practicing skills to boost results. Again, I like that yellow post-it note. I'm glad they came out with those because I use those to remind me of things. We all get so busy every day with all kinds of issues and problems. I need to see things that remind me that I need to do something. And I think one of the things we all need to do, and we again probably don't do it often enough, I know I don't, is to evaluate our own character-related behaviors, which contribute to good conversations. And we need to think about that and evaluate ourselves. And I think on the next screen we will show one of the things in the book I wrote. You know, we all have apps for everything. To turn on the lights in the morning and measure how fast we're running when we're running. When I wrote this book, I put an app with it because I know I need reminders. And one of the things that you can do, if you, and you don't have to buy the book, you can just go to Be a Better You, go to my website, and get the free app, and you can evaluate yourself on 10 different areas that I think can help us all improve our character. And you can evaluate yourself on a scale of 1 to 5 and pick out maybe one or two areas where you'd really like to get better at it. And then you can enter something into the app, and next morning, next Monday morning, you'll get an email that says, did you do it? And do you want to try it again for another week, or do you want to try something else? Because I know I don't get better at anything unless I'm really thinking about it and have regular reminders, because, again, we all get caught up in too much stuff. And so this is the book, and Don mentioned there's a chapter in there that's in your packet. It's about character and communication, so I hope you take a few minutes to read it. I've just touched on a few highlights of it here.
And I also want to highlight that the particular checklist that Bob was mentioning a few moments ago is also in the agenda packet. He very kindly provided that. The app is more interactive, but you can see what the questions are right there in your agenda packet. So, again, we're trying to give you resources to get not only an understanding of these topics, but something you can launch forward with.
Again, I have a visible reminder. I just need that. Maybe you're better, I'm sure, than me. I need reminders. I need something to make me keep thinking about this. And one of the things I've done over the years, too, is I look for role models who are successful in having difficult conversations. And I've seen all kinds of people, and I just always try to learn from them. And just to finish over here, Carnegie Hall, you've probably all heard of Carnegie Hall. If you make Carnegie Hall as a musician, you've reached a pinnacle. And there's an old story about Carnegie Hall that there was a couple visiting in New York and they couldn't find it. And they're walking around and then they saw a guy with a violin case. And they said, well, maybe he knows. So they asked him, stopped him. They said, excuse me, could you tell us how to get to Carnegie Hall? And he said, yes. Practice, practice, practice. And I never forgot that because I know no matter what I'm doing, if I want to get better, I have to practice. And I always try to remember myself that none of us is perfect and none of us will ever be perfect, but we can always get better. But we really have to make a conscious effort to do that. And so I hope this is helpful to you to do that. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Bob. And I know we're already getting a series of comments and people are appreciating what you're presenting. Bob shared with you a number of key skills and, of course, quite a bit of information in there. But we want to take a moment for you to highlight which skills you would like to develop further. And so we get a sense of, you know, what your interest and what your personal commitment might be to enhancing your effectiveness in communicating around these core issues. And while that's happening, let me just check a couple things in with you, Bob. Someone was asking here, you know, how to deal with, how to get people to shift culture. You know, many city managers and directors, department heads, and even line employees come into a situation, you know, where there's a culture already established. How do you get people to begin to adopt best practices to shift what they're doing without making them feel wrong or get defensive or, you know, raise the hackles of their fears?
Yeah, I think if you're talking, Don, about within our own organization that we're running, is that what you're thinking about?
And also this was particularly about the elected officials as well.
Well, it's an ongoing process, and there's nothing that you can just click your fingers and make it happen. Over a period of time, I know when I came in as a new manager in a few different positions, I always thought it was going to take me about 2 years to change the culture, both in terms of relationships with the elected officials and relationships with the department heads, and then I think the whole organization. as manager, you have to model the behaviors that you want everybody else to practice, which again is listening, being respectful of people, getting the best out of them, having them contribute to things. And I just think you have to model that. If you model it, then people that work for you see it and they start using it with their employees. And I've just seen it happen several times when I went into an organization. A couple of them that were not operating very well when I came in, and I think helped leave them in a better place when I left. But it's really up to us to model, and they have to see that we're really honest about it.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Well, there's much more that we could be talking about in this. So I just see from the polling results here that a lot of interest in giving effective feedback and also in these character-related behaviors. Several people asked about the app. If you're having difficulty locating the app, I will actually put the link to the app in the follow-up email to all of you that registered for today's webinar. So you'll be able to have that and pick up on that, and we try to get that out within 24 hours. It depends how long it takes to turn around the digital recording of the video, but we'll help you out and get you all the resources that you need and want. Okay, well, we're going to move on here, and we have, thanks so much, Bob. We're turning now to David Ellis. And David, thanks for joining us here. We're pleased to have you, and let's take a look at your take on navigating difficult conversations. We especially want to see if there's an opportunity to demonstrate doing that with this group. So, David, if you'd take us away, please.
Sure. Good morning and good afternoon, everyone there. As mentioned, I'm David Ellis. I'm one of the deputy county managers here in Wake County, North Carolina. And I just wanted to spend some little time talking about my experiences trying to navigate difficult conversations in the workplace. And just want to make it clear from my perspective that there probably will always be that uneasy feeling in your gut when having these types of conversations. But as Bob mentioned, with practice, they become easier to parlay the information. There's not a magical, there's no panacea that's going to make things easy because we're dealing with people and we're dealing with emotions. So, keep those things in mind. We can get better, but if you still have that uneasy feeling or that queasy feeling, that's okay. That's probably a good thing. One of the things is, you know, we typically have a lot of opportunities for these difficult conversations in the workplace. I was joking with a colleague. We were talking about there's always the person who will they accidentally grab your lunch and eat your lunch. There's the person who manages or seems to be out of work every time there's a holiday before or after the holiday, and just other things that happen on a daily basis in the workplace. But the most critical thing is to have those conversations with folks so they don't build up, that they don't fester, and that you can reach some type of resolution, positive resolution in those conversations. What I try to do, we'll go to the next slide, is really look at the types of difficult conversations that I tend to deal with on a fairly regular basis. The challenge with each of these is they're very different, involving folks you may work with, folks who live in your municipality. They involve your boss at times, and some may be elected officials that you're dealing with. And so, but I think there's a foundation that's helpful in navigating these conversations. Go to the next slide. So my experience has been to really, you have to be well-versed on the topic at hand, particularly with elected officials, and I'll talk about that. You really can't have cripples in there. Bob showed kind of a continuum, and you need to be at least midway or three-quarters of the way on that continuum in terms of knowledge. Many times in my role, I'm depending on information that I receive from someone else. And so while I want to trust that, it's important to trust that information, it's also just as important to verify that you're receiving accurate information. You want to choose your words carefully. When you have difficult conversations. You want to stay away from words that imply, that are negative, that imply someone that may downgrade their intelligence or how they handle the situation. You really want to focus on positive. When a lot of negative words are used, it really cuts at and creates the opportunity not to have a positive resolution. Bob talked about this. This is a dialogue. I always tell people my undergraduate degree is in psychology, and I probably use that every day because, you know, you want to understand what people are saying, but also what they are not saying. You want to be able to ask questions. You want to repeat back to them what you've heard. And so that's absolutely critical in understanding and having these types of dialogues. The other thing about listening is you have to be willing to change your decision. You may be presented with some information that you did not have that may change how you see a situation. And you can't let your ego get in the way of that by not taking that information into account and making a decision and changing your decision. It's not, you can't do this all the time, but in many cases, it's good to kind of rehearse what you're going to say. And you want to rehearse it, but you don't want to be stiff. We talked about the importance of listening to the other person or other people. But if you're new at this and you're unsure, sometimes it's better to practice with a friend or family member just so you can get your language down and how you want to speak to that person and see how the other person may receive that information. So when I look at personnel, we'll go to the next slide. When I look at personnel-related conversations, the ones that I've seen the most in my role, you have folks who are underpaid or underappreciated, and many times they will come to you and talk about they feel like they've looked at the local newspaper and another jurisdiction is paying someone $10,000 to $15,000 more in that role. And even when your human resources department goes out and they do their market survey, it shows that there's that $10,000 to $15,000 isn't really what the difference is. And so sometimes it's helpful helping people understand total compensation and making sure they're comparing apples to apples and not apples to mangoes. And many times it's not necessarily, as you talk with people, you let them speak, it's not necessarily the fact that they feel they're not paid enough, but sometimes it's just they feel unappreciated. So working with them on things that would make them feel more appreciated, looking for other opportunities in the organization for them to grow and do other things. And so that compensation conversation may start there, but it may end up in a totally different place. Also my role, you have to look at individual and department. One of the things I think we don't do enough is we're just kind of rewarding and praising staff if their performance meets or exceeds expectations. And so that is one thing. And as Bob mentioned, you want to do something like that on a regular basis. You don't want to wait until the end of the performance year to give them feedback, whether positive or negative. People like to hear that they're doing well on a regular basis. And so because if they're hearing that on a regular basis and something goes wrong, they're going to be more apt to hear and understand if there are problems in the organization that they need to address. And again, and Bob mentioned this, particularly if there's a department head and issues are arising, help that department head figure out how they can address issues in leadership or staffing and management. Don't just tell them to go out and fix it, but, you know, kind of brainstorm with them about how can I help you kind of address this issue that's happening in your department. The other personnel related issue is kind of the lack of transparency and or honesty. Sometimes when you are at a deputy or managerial role, people do not like to give you bad news. So they will tend to couch it or give you information that's not not necessarily give you the full information. And so part of what has to occur is, you know, you have to learn to ask a lot of questions in this role, and you have to let folks know, just because you're bringing me bad, you know, you want the bad news as well as the good news, and getting people to understand, just because you bring me bad news, it isn't the end of the world, but we're going to kind of work and try to figure out how to address it. When you lose that, when you don't have that lack of transparency and you lose trust, it makes it difficult to have that relationship with the department head, and it goes up the same way in my position with the manager. No one wants bad news, but you've got to be able to give it to them, and you have to be able to give it to them honestly.
Okay, let me just interject for a second here, David. Your points are really important, and people are responding with interesting questions. I also noticed that some people were experiencing some sound challenges. As noted in the email out to you reminding you about the session, a good thing to do if you're having sound challenges is to use your phone call versus the computer audio. Sometimes there are local internet connections that you might have that can affect computer audio sound. Just encourage you to do that. I'm trying to do what I can on this end, but some of it may be local for you. I think it's actually improved in the last moment. So we're trying to give you the best quality we can. Thanks for sticking with us as we make adjustments.
Okay. You want me to keep going? Ready?
Please do.
Okay. So we're up on kind of citizen and resident-related conversations, and I think these are some of the most difficult conversations to have. But a couple things to keep in mind. You definitely, most definitely need to treat the person with whom you're engaged with the utmost of respect. And focus on that person at hand. One of the things we tend to do, and I know we've all probably been on it, you're on a phone call with someone and you hear them on the computer typing in the background, or you hear them kind of responding to a text or something. But when you're particularly dealing with citizens, you want to make sure that they feel like they are the most important person for the time that they have you. So treating them with respect, making sure you're giving them undivided attention is something that goes a long way to diffusing a potential situation. While we all have, you know, we love our degrees, where we went to college and our experience that we bring forward, we have to remember that not all of our residents are, while they are experts, I would say, in their communities and neighborhoods, they may use different language than we do. And so making sure we're not using kind of our government speak and treating this as a conversation and not a lecture. It's really important to kind of have a dialogue with folks, allow them to ask questions, help them to understand why something is occurring. All too often we will do government speak. It shuts them down or gets them angry. Then we get upset because they don't understand what we're talking about. We just need to make it a conversation like you're having a conversation with your family. Sometimes I've gotten many phone calls where folks have been extremely frustrated or angry. And so the question is, how do you diffuse that situation so that you can have that difficult conversation with folks? And what I found is many times they're not angry at you, but they're angry because they've either been bounced around from department to department. They feel like the government doesn't care about them, the local government doesn't care about them, and so it's important to really be empathetic to their concern. And as much as possible, even if you have to get them to another department, get them to a person who you know will take care of the situation. And if you have to call them back, if you have to tell them, I'm working on this, let me call you back in an hour or a day or whatnot, make sure you call that person back and give them the information. I'm always shocked when I do call back and people go, I mean, they're surprised that I actually called back. And then one thing I did mention on here is if you have the opportunity, take the time and call them back a day or two later just to see if things worked out. And, you know, that goes a long way to building that relationship in the community. Next one. The elected official conversations. You know, I will share a story. When I was first working in the manager's office in a different locality, I had to go meet with the chairman on a Friday afternoon before a holiday. And I remember someone pulled me aside and said, when you go in here, whatever you do, do not look down at your notes. He wants to make sure that you know exactly what you're talking about. And that was extremely critical in moving the agenda that we wanted to move forward, because it gets back to kind of the trust and verify issue. So when you're talking with an elected official, depending on what the conversation is, you want to make sure that he or she, they have confidence that you know what you're talking about. When you're bringing items forward, I always tell folks, you know, we want to make sure that we provide the local body with options and a staff recommendation. Sometimes it's better to do a best case, a worst case, and a most likely scenario. But talk about what are the positives with each one, what are the negatives, and make sure you have a recommended option and why that option is being recommended. Elected officials are depending on us to provide them with the best information possible, and if we don't do that, we're not doing our job. In helping the elected officials understand the consequences and unintended consequences of their action or lack of action. Again, we're kind of the experts, and so we need to be aware of, if we move option A forward, what will that do to options C and D, and being able to articulate that. And you have to be frank and honest with elected officials. I mean, they don't necessarily want a wishy-washy response. They want you to give them your best recommendation along with why. And so, you know, being wishy-washy at a time, that is not what they're looking for, and it doesn't really help them reach a decision. The manager deputy assistant is truly one that's built on trust. Similar to some of the other ones I've spoken with, honesty is critical in building and maintaining that relationship. And it's a good opportunity to debate points of view. But one of the things that, you know, as a deputy or an assistant, you have to recognize is that ultimately the manager will make a decision. And sometimes as a deputy or an assistant, you don't necessarily have all of the information that the manager will have, and other times you don't have the experience that the manager will have. And so while he may make a decision that's opposite of what you think, there's typically a reason for that. And so two things I like to remind people of is, you can debate that decision all day behind closed doors, but when you walk out, you have to be in support of that decision and publicly. And one of the things for deputies and assistants, I think, is to, you know, going back and asking the manager why he or she made this decision. Because that's a learning teachable moment for you to kind of understand why they made a decision. Because, again, we may not always have all of the information, and it's a good opportunity to show the manager that you're trying to learn. It's not just about making a decision, but you're trying to figure out how he or she made that decision.
So we're on to a polling question now, because we're eager to find out which of these different kinds of conversations you've just been hearing about from David would be something that you would like to see demonstrated in a brief demonstration here. So this will be live, unrehearsed, chance to see how this fits. So pick your favorite one out of this list to be demonstrated in this webinar, and we're going to try something new here of live, unrehearsed dialogue to illustrate the points. So we give just a moment to take a look at this. One of the challenges that's being highlighted here, David, if you could provide just a very brief response, is how do you assist employees who are not honest with you or cannot identify how you can assist them? What do you do in that sort of situation?
Can you repeat that? I got...
How do you assist employees who are not honest with you? In other words, they don't really fess up to what the shortcomings are that they have, or aren't willing to identify some actions that they can take to kind of push it back on you.
I think sometimes it's better to actually have, if you feel like the employee is someone that has potential, to invest in have a coach come in. And have a coach that works with the person one-on-one for a few months to help identify what those issues are and to really help them develop skills that will assist them as they move forward. That's been one of the things that has helped me, because sometimes it's hard to hear it from a supervisor. But when people hear it from someone from the outside and someone who's willing to work with them on sharpening those skills, they seem to take a little better to that.
Okay, so we have just a few minutes here to give a demonstration. It's clear that the overwhelming interest is in personnel-related issues, so I'm going to play a role here and see how that works out, and we'll share this with the audience. So let me get you back on the screen here. Okay, so David, we want to take a look at this situation. Is I read in the newspaper that my counterpart in another jurisdiction makes $10,000 more than I do. I believe that I'm grossly undercompensated. Why am I not getting paid what they're getting paid?
So, thank you. And I was just, which newspaper did you read that in?
I read that in the local Gazette.
Okay.
Last Thursday.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the things what I would consider is, you know, the newspaper is focused on, you know, just salary, not necessarily looking at total compensation. And while the titles of the position may be the same, one of the things I'd encourage you to look at are the job responsibilities the same. Sometimes a human services director in one jurisdiction is totally different than, or the responsibilities are different for a human services director in another division. So that's something we can have our HR department take a look at. But are there other issues that are other than salary that you're concerned about?
Well, I've just been working really hard, and I think I'm doing a bang up job, and I don't understand why I'm not getting paid more. I'm working even sometimes outside of my classification, I think, falling short in my performance that I'm not getting the money that I deserve.
Well, I did have the opportunity to go back and look, and you're actually the second highest paid director within our organization, and your merit increases have been fairly high compared to other departments. So your work is valued. You're one of our star performers, and you know, within local governments, we do have salary constraints and things we can and cannot do, but I am definitely would like to spend some more time talking with you and looking at how we can get you to feel like you're valued here. I sense that maybe you don't feel like you're valued within the organization.
Well, that's really the nub of it. I mean, I'm do everything I possibly can. I see, frankly, others around me that don't put as much effort into their work as I do in mine, and yet they seem to get more raises than I do. I just don't understand how this is fair.
Well, you know, I wouldn't necessarily look at the work of your counterparts, because sometimes what you don't know is what they're doing the other 7 hours that you may not see them during the day. What I want to do is focus on you and how we help you to see your value. If there's some professional opportunities that you would like to participate in, or if there's some skills or that you'd like to gain, I'd like to look at opportunities for professional development to help you continue to grow. As I mentioned, you're an extremely valuable asset to this organization. Your people skills, you're respected by the board, your staff, you've done a good job of developing your staff, and so let's spend some time talking about how we can help develop you and make you and do some of the things that you'd like to do.
So what can you offer me?
Well, we can look at some professional development. I'd like for you to maybe identify some professional development opportunities that you would like to participate in, and we can sit down and get those scheduled. I'd also like, I'll have HR take a look at your, to kind of do an apples and apples comparison of yourself and our counter organizations, counter jurisdictions, to see how your salary and overall compensation rank with our counterparts.
Okay, so I appreciate that you're listening to my concern. I'm hearing that you're willing to take a look at opportunities that I bring forward to you to enhance my professional development, and that there'll be an opportunity to review and compare the fairness of my compensation with other similar positions.
Yes, and I would say that if you know, I mean, you've mentioned this person that was in the newspaper, but if there are other organizations where you would like HR to take a look at it, bring those forward, and we'll have them take a look at those also.
Okay. So when do you think, if I identify these things, when could we get back together to see review this and see what can be done?
I'll tell you what I'll do. I will make myself available. You let me know when you have the information, and we'll do a lunch and go out, lunch on me, and we'll talk about it and get moving on.
Okay. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.
Okay, so as we were trying to illustrate there, there's actually two sides of a conversation like this, and at the end I was trying to actually to model what I think employees can do on their end of these difficult conversations, because it's kind of difficult to ask your boss for more and kind of push and see where you can go. And David followed many of the guidelines that Bob presented, as well as himself, in dealing with this kind of situation. And it really behooves the employee to be effective in how they make requests. One of the things that you can find at the icma.org/coaching website is some guidance on how to make effective requests of other people. There's actually a formula for doing that, and I encourage you to take a look at it if you're seeking to make a request of somebody else. I follow that. It's intention, you know, what my intention is, what my observation is about the situation, what my request is, and then a confirmation that I did with David about how we were going to close the loop. Both sides in a conversation have to figure out how to navigate, and not just the manager to the employee. So thanks, David, for playing, and hope that was a benefit to our audience. So, David, you want to quickly cover a summary here, because we want to leap forward into LaSheila's discussion about what to do when conversation alone doesn't cut it. David? Hello, David? David? I'm not hearing David's comments. Okay, so let me just cover for David here a couple of key points that he was highlighting. David, they're saying that your seat is empty, so let me cover this for you. So understand and be well-versed in the topic. He was talking about that. Choose your words carefully. Remember, it's a dialogue. And use active listening skills, and be willing to change your decision if warranted, and rehearse if possible. Actually, that formula that I gave you that's on the website about, and I'll put it in the email out to you, is one that I actually encourage you to rehearse with somebody. Don't go cold the first time on an important discussion, not having talked it through and not having gotten some feedback from somebody else about how you're coming across. Are you coming across offensive? Are you coming across defensive? Are you engaging? It's really hard for us to see that sometimes about ourselves, and it's when we start to introduce judgments of other people that we begin to complicate our conversation. So I really encourage you to take a look at those and see what you can do to make that work more effectively. So let's move forward, and LaSheila, I'm opening up your microphone here, and I'm also sending your connection for the for your webcam, if you'd fire that up, and we'll get you started on, you know, what to do when, and we have one more polling question while she's getting set up here. Let's just ask about the practices you'd like to have great conversations, and those were the summary points that you heard from me recite from David's material. So just take a moment and lock in for yourself. What are some practices you'd like to apply to make your conversations more effective? And LaSheila, it looks like you're on with your webcam. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And we'll just be turning this over to you in a moment. Okay, we're seeing a bunch of responses coming in. I encourage you to take a look at the resources that are available in the agenda packet and make sure you make use of those. We're getting questions about that. We're also getting some questions on some other topics here that we'll get back to after we get all of the presenters presenting, and we'll get a chance to get perspectives from everybody. Let's take a look at what you want to lock in on your learning from this in terms of practices you'd like to apply. Seeing a lot of interest in choosing the words carefully, remembering it's a dialogue, using the active listening, and being willing to change your decision and understand and be prepared. I'd really like to underscore, because you heard it, practice, 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 the Carnegie Hall example from Bob. You heard it also from David. I would also go in on that. I think that's really something absolutely critical. Oftentimes, in our fear of a difficult conversation, we sort of avoid it, wait to the last minute, and don't take the time to practice, and you really have a lot of opportunity to improve what you do by practicing. So, Lucila, thanks so much for joining us. Let me get you the controls here so that you can move forward on the on this. Also, here is backup for each of our presenters as needed, so I'm here for you, but go right ahead. Talk about mediation. What to do when difficult conversations break down?
Well, first I want to thank Don for giving me this opportunity. I work in a world of civil rights, and this is a topic that we have to use as a team to move forward, so I'm very happy to share any tools and resources. I'm still on the path of learning how to work effectively with groups and how to make sure that individuals can move towards a solution. So, a lot of stuff to learn, a lot of information to share. So I'm going to move right along to the information at hand. And so I want to talk a bit about the advantages of mediation. There are a couple of disadvantages, but I want to focus on the positive. Mediation advantages is really a fair, neutral process where you bring parties together that may have different thoughts about an issue and really want to sit down and have that conversation in a setting in which both parties feel that it's equal. There is no determination of guilt or innocence. It's really a process to get the facts down. Both parties understand that, through that process, it really is a confidential process. So if nothing is successful as a result of mediation, they can both leave there refreshed and knowing that that conversation stays in the room. Also, as a mediator, you really are a third party assisting the parties in reaching a voluntary, mutually beneficial resolution. And really your role isn't to come up with a solution, but it's to focus on how can you get the parties to reach a solution. One thing we've learned as a team is if the parties aren't getting that buy-in, we do an evaluation after the fact, and they will say, hey, I feel like the solution wasn't exactly what I wanted. And so we're constantly working on ways to improve that. And it's less costly than a lawsuit and avoids uncertainty about any type of judicial outcome. And so in civil rights, we bring a lot of cases to public hearing. We've also used this in working with HR departments and working with neighbor disputes. And so for us, it really is a process that you use other than going to court. And so what is mediation? It is an alternative to traditional investigative litigation process. And so in the type of work in civil rights that we focus on, and even you can use this in HR or even working with employees that don't necessarily see eye to eye, is really alternative to a traditional process, and you don't want litigation involved. And really what kind of solidifies that is a settlement agreement in which both parties agree that these are the terms of the agreement and this is how we'll move forward. It really is an informal process in which a trained mediator assists with parties reaching a negotiated solution. And so that person facilitating the process really needs to be trained how to have those conversations, and they really need to be a good listener. I do want to say that that's been a theme all along, and I want to affirm that that's the case with mediation as well, being a good listener. And so who should participate in mediation? I would say any parties that have a dispute that cannot be resolved informally, whether it's through a simple communication, really are those escalated issues that they feel that, you know, we just can't solve it together. And we really need to have an authentic conversation about what are our interests versus our positions. And so their position is that maybe they're angry about something, a situation that a neighbor has done, say that there's an issue of boundaries and they feel like their neighbor has breached the boundaries and put up a fence in their yard. And really the interest could be that, hey, I have, you know, set boundaries. I paid for a certain amount of a plot. And I want to have access to that because I have a dog and kids, and I want to give them a really good space to play in. And you violated that by not asking or researching what the boundaries are of our property. And so those are some examples that you can use. And to ensure successful mediation, it is imperative that all parties make the decision that can make decisions need to be present and participate in the process. An example of it, we've had situations where individuals had to leave to ask their finance department or their attorney what type of remedies can they provide or monetary remedies they can provide to resolve an issue. And that really can hold up the process if, you know, say both parties agree that to settle this issue that we're going to need the terms of the agreement would include $10,000, and say that they contact their finance department and they're only given the authority to give $200. Well, that's a huge difference. So just make sure that all parties are aware and present that can make those decisions. And representatives should have full authority to settle or resolve that dispute. And so there may be situations where training is involved and it requires an entire party to department to receive training to resolve that dispute. And so making sure that the HR department is on board with all individuals in that entity to resolve that issue. So there's a lot of homework on behalf of the parties involved before they get there. And one thing we have is really a great process as a team, whether it's scheduling, answering questions, giving them an idea of the process prior to them coming on board so they can know what to expect the day of mediation and they can be successful in the process. And the reason I keep saying they, because really it's the individuals that come together to resolve the issue. As a mediator, you're really facilitating a conversation. So they have to see this as a process that can be useful, that both parties see a win-win. And so who is a mediator? A mediator is a neutral, unbiased professional with no stake in the outcome of the mediation process. A mediator doesn't decide who's right or wrong. They have no authority to impose a settlement agreement on parties. Essentially, they draft the settlement agreement. They can bring that settlement agreement to both parties, but both parties have a stake in what goes into a settlement agreement. And sometimes it may not be a settlement agreement that comes as a result of a mediation. It may just be, hey, we have a clear understanding of what the expectations are going forward, and maybe we'd like to have that in writing in some format, and you can say, well, Would you like that in a settlement agreement, or would you like that drafted in some official, on some official letterhead? And so we both know what to expect going forward. It's recommended that a mediation, only a mediator who has experience or trained, should mediate a process. And so really having some type of mediation training is essential to including, to making the mediation successful. And how does the mediation process work? So all parties who has a dispute may request a mediation. What we usually have in our department is, because we have cases that go forth in investigation, we always ask before we do an investigation, a full investigation, would you like to have mediation as an option? And so we really have to explain what mediation is. And at any point of an investigation or we're looking into an issue, we always reiterate through the process, would you like a mediation? Would you like to have you and the other party sit down to have that conversation? There are times where we don't use mediation, and that's really when youth are involved or it's involved, sexual harassment are involved, because they are really heated situations, and it's really what we've experienced, it's really an uncomfortable situation for all parties, and it rarely leads to a resolution. So, but as far as the process is concerned, both parties, the mediation should schedule it at a neutral location. And so we prefer that it's at our office. Our office is a neutral location. We ask both parties to show up at a different time to avoid them meeting each other at the same time and there being a conversation in the hallway or while they're sitting there waiting that could lead to an unsuccessful mediation. And so it's important to know that all disputes should be solved in the mediation, so not prior to that mediation process, but if both parties choose to move forward and they agree that the dispute should be settled, it should result in some type of settlement agreement or some type of official document on letterhead.
Okay, let's go to a polling question here because we're interested in what the experience is of our audience with regard to mediation, and that'll help us in allocating the time on this discussion and what might be of particular interest or use to you as an audience in responding to this. So let's give you a moment here to take a look at it and see what your experience is and how LaSheila and the materials that she's provided can help you. I wanted to highlight several things about the materials. LaSheila very kindly provided the page from their policies book in her organization, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, that they use for mediation. That's in the agenda packet. She's also included a sample checklist about how to look through and assess issues with regard to potential circumstances where mediation might be helpful. And as you'll see in a moment, she's also provided an example, an actual mediation agreement. So as you're thinking about this tool, and if you're not as big as Cedar Rapids, if you're a smaller organization, I think even smaller cities I'm finding are turning from time to time to mediation as a tool, sometimes turning to an outside mediation source to help them and help people in their community resolve things that really are too personal or too specific to really warrant taking elected officials' time to do it or aren't readily resolved in that kind of context. So let's take a look here at what people are saying about their experience. About a third have used it. Another quarter or so have had some mixed results, and the rest are thinking about it. So let's take a look, and LaSheila, I'd ask you, just because we're short on time here, if you could move through the next set of slides in about 5 minutes or so. We want to have time for questions at the end and appreciate all the materials you've got in your presentation and in the agenda packet to help people who want to dive further into this area.
Okay, works for me. And so I'm going to just say the main point of this slide is just keep a move, an open eye, open mind towards mediation. Really going there with a positive attitude. Know that it may take several hours. A mediation takes up to 4 to 5 hours. Some takes 2 days. So really making sure that you keep that open mind and keep a really positive attitude. And so as far as what happens today on mediation, you begin that joint session with all parties. It's important to make sure you set up the ground rules and give all parties an opportunity to share their open statement. One thing I've stated is that I'm left-handed. And so I would say this is not, if I go to the left, and I'll say I'm left-handed, so therefore I'm going to go start with the left, the party is located on the left side of me. It's just a preference that I have. So then the other party involved doesn't think that I'm, you know, being biased. It's something that's very simple, but it makes a huge difference. And so also I have both parties communicate directly to me until they're at the point where they've kind of cooled down and can start talking directly across the table. And so any opening statements come, I ask them to look directly at me and provide that information until they could talk directly across the table to each other in a respectful manner. And so how long the mediation takes, the process takes, I'd say it takes anywhere, again, up to 4 to 5 hours. What's important, an important takeaway is that if mediation seems like it's starting to fail, you can break groups up into what's called a caucus. Is that you'll say, well, you know, at this point, I want to break this up into a caucus, and that's when you meet with groups individually and to figure out what do they want in the process. And the damage worksheet is a really good tool to use, especially if one of the if the complainant really wants to see, you know, what is it that I want in the process, and that the complainant is really the person bringing forth the issue, and then you bring that information to the respondent, which is the person who is responding to the issue. But the damage worksheet really helps you kind of narrow down those issues. And so I said it could take approximately 4 to 5 hours from my experience. If it takes 3 hours, it's a really successful mediation. I've seen them take usually the entire day. So we book off the entire day, 8 hours for the mediation process. I haven't seen many that take 3 hours, but if you're doing a mediation with a partner, you can have another mediator with you. It may take less time. And so what you're looking at is really the facts as presented. And the facts are really what the person that the respondent or complainant believes that occurred to them. So not what you're interpreting from the information, but what they believe occurred. And that should be validated. And so the outcomes of a successful mediation is both, it's a mutually beneficial resolution. Both parties can choose and sign a formal agreement. And that, you know, if monetary payment is involved, training, that they all agree on the exchange of that monetary payment, the time and day of the training, any type of information that are outcomes that they expect, that there's an agreement in place so you can move forward with the next process, which would involve making sure that each party meets the term of the agreement. And so I'm just going to go to the Cedar Rapids Civil Rights Commission's website to show you some of our mediation, and I'm going to say we call them mediation and conciliation agreements, and they're used interchangeably in our field. And so if you look here on the website, those are some there are several settlement agreements that we have on our website. And so if you go to the Cedar Rapids Civil Rights Commission, let's see, We have to go back to the PowerPoint and click that.
Let me help you get back to the PowerPoint.
Okay, thank you.
So we're moving to where you were in the PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Okay.
So I think it just because of the time and the challenge of going through your website, why don't we give them the link? They have it there, and they can explore mm-hmm. it on their own. And maybe you can talk with them about what to do if mediation fails. And then I want to have a couple minutes for you to talk about some concrete examples that you could just describe to help people understand what the circumstances are and how that works. So let's cover that one next, what to do if mediation fails.
Okay. What to do if mediation fails. If both parties are unable to reach a mediation, then the mediation should be closed on your end. And so you really want to send a letter out to say, you know, mediation was unsuccessful. And if it's an investigation that's involved, really tell them, hey, it was unsuccessful. We'll move forward with the investigation. And that could be an HR investigation as well. Complaints should be resolved. It should be resolved there. Both parties may hire an attorney. I've seen it in situations where one party has an attorney and the other one doesn't. And so you still should treat both parties the same. And so if one party has an attorney and the other one's not represented by an attorney, you shouldn't lean to assist the party that's not represented by an attorney. You shouldn't be biased in that way. It really does set a negative tone.
Okay, so we're going to cover questions in just a moment. Thanks, LaSheila, for introducing that important topic of what to do when your difficult conversations don't work out and you need to take a look at some other tools. Again, we're trying to encourage you to think about difficult conversations as being circumstances to use a variety of tools in a variety of ways. So that's the important purpose here. We've given you the contact information for our presenters. We've got some other things we'd like to be sure to get your feedback on for today. We've got some post-webinar discussion questions, so if you're there as a group, we encourage you to have some discussion about the kinds of difficult conversations in your community and your agency, techniques that you'd like to pick up from today, and some skills that you'd like to practice to get better. So we have an important polling question here, which is we'd like to hear from you and get some feedback to our presenters. Appreciate all their hard work in the preparation for today, but have you tick off as many of the items on this list as you found valuable? And again, you'll be getting information about how to access the agenda packet if you haven't been successful in accessing it already in the follow-up email from today's webinar. So you'll be getting additional information about how to do that. And while that's happening, let me just bring Bob and David, if he's available. Looked like he had to step out at one point. Don't know if he's back with us.
I'm back. Sorry about that.
Okay, good. People were worried about you. So what we want to do is take a look here at what are some of the questions that we're getting in the conversation here thus far. Lots of different questions, so we encourage people to be following up with our presenters. We won't have time to reach all of them. So over the years, somebody's had the experience of referring residents to use mediation as a free service in their local area for issues that residents bring to the city, but which the city has no jurisdiction over. However, they found that residents are reluctant to use it because it requires extra work on their behalf to set it up and to get the other party to agree to meet. Do you have any suggestions about that sort of situation? How can cities, you know, which don't have to solve everything, nonetheless help their citizens resolve matters so their community can be as cohesive and respectful as possible? What's your quick take on that, if you would, LaSheila? We just have a moment for a brief answer.
I would say if you have a civil rights commission or if there's a mediation dispute resolution services, you can refer them to that entity. But really, civil rights commissions can be helpful in resolving those issues. They've seen a lot of experiences in working with most of the employers, housing providers, educational institutions, so they're aware of what the issues are. And also, if you don't have such an entity, maybe setting up a mediation program, a small program, and having some type of tiered system of seeing which types of entities you would take and making sure that you have staff that are trained to facilitate those processes.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. So let's take a look at the polling results here. So people got a lot of value out of learning ways to address conversations successfully and being motivated to try new approaches that improve and to identifying different types of conversations and what to do and hope that people will delve into the agenda packet and get the additional resources there. I'm glad to be providing those to you and appreciate the work that the presenters did with me in identifying resources and having them added to the agenda packet. So let's just take a quick run through on a couple other things that are important here to share with you. Lots of resources are at the coaching program website, icma.org/coaching. You'll see useful materials there. The Agendas and Archives tab will get you to the resource materials that I've been mentioning. We also, and when you go to that page, this is what it looks like. So you'll see the agenda packet. You'll see videos that you can link to of past sessions. This video will be up, assuming that we get a good turnaround on the digital recording within 24 hours. So lots of things that you can be tapping and ways that you can be building your one-on-one coaching resources. I'll give you a link to the specific place that you can learn that technique for making effective requests of others. It's very powerful, something you can do in about 10, 15 minutes as you prepare for a tough conversation. I encourage you to do that kind of rehearsal and practice. There are videos to help you. There's Coach Connect, which we've been highlighting as a way to connect with a coach on topics that are of interest for you, and you as a player can go in and put what your interests are and find coaches that are available. We encourage everyone who has an interest in coaching to use the resources here that ICMA has provided. We also have talent development resources that you can be tapping and things that you can be using in your own organization and doing effectively. We encourage you, if you're going to the ICMA conference, we've got a special session on building successful coaching and talent development relationships on Tuesday, October 24th. So hope that you'll join us for that. It'd be great to see you in person. And we also have an upcoming webinar, which we encourage you to register for. You need to register for each webinar independently. And the next one is on tools to resolve tough issues in your community. So this is an extension of the discussion today, actually taking a much different tack, actually going into what are tough issues that happen in your community. How have organizations developed best practices to address those? And what can we be doing together to be effective in helping our communities get those resolved in ways that build community and build it effectively? So encourage you to take a look at that. So I know we're just at the time here. I'm just going to put Robert and David, if they're available, back on the screen here. And we'll just take a moment here as we are closing. If people want to stay on for other questions, that they might have about this topic. Let me just take a look at some of the things that are coming across here. Folks are identifying that they are sort of struggling with how do you develop the confidence to have these difficult conversations. You were talking, Bob, about the fear that gets in the way, the fear that people have. I know you talked about practice, practice, practice. Is there anything in addition to practice, practice, practice to help people get more confident about having these difficult conversations? And, you know, what would you and David and LaSheila suggest to our audience about that critical issue?
One, I think, is just when you go in to meet with somebody and you sit at a table, sit up, look professionally, kind of lean in a little bit so they know that you're listening to them. I just think, again, if you don't have this pressure on you that you got to decide this in the next 2 minutes or 5 minutes and know that most things can take a little time to resolve, I think that helps you go in with confidence and hopefully get something resolved. That's just one thing.
Okay. We got another question. Let me just hit this one because it's an important one for us to cover, and maybe we can turn to David and to first and then others. This person was hoping it could cover the difficult conversation regarding race, inclusion, workplace diversification, et cetera. Any suggestions, David, do you want to kick off a very brief, because we're at time,
right.
Suggestions about how to engage that topic? And then if others want to chime in, please do.
So, I really think that topic is one that has to be, you have to create safe spaces within the organization. You can have those conversations. And where people can ask questions, folks aren't going to get offended by what the question or what they may hear. But if we don't create these safe spaces where people can have the discussions, we're not going to be able to have them. I don't feel like you can do them in a large room of 25 or 30 fellow employees and really make a difference.
And I know that ICMA has made a major commitment to diversity and to inclusion, and they have a task force on that, which is a report, and that's accessible to everybody once, whether you're a member of ICMA or not. Of course, we always encourage you to become a member of ICMA, but it's on the website, so there are resources there. LaSheila and Bob, any quick comments about that one? Well, we can't hear you, LaSheila. You might be on mute.
Yes, I am. I was appointed to, I serve as the Civil Rights Director, and my city manager appointed me as the Chief Diversity Officer. And the first thing I did was sit down with each director and ask them what are the issues concerning their department in relation to race, ethnicity, or diversity in general. And they, I made it comfortable, so I took out the coffee. And after that, we ended up doing a climate study to see what all employees felt about it, and we used that as part of a guide while we were establishing a diversity committee to address some of the issues. And so we came up with charters and work plans and different things that we're going to use moving forward. So.
Okay. Great. Well, we're at time here. We could really, this is a robust topic. Glad for all the interest that was here. We had nearly 1,000 sites participating in today's session. We'll be getting the digital recording out. Hope that you'll share it with your colleagues and continue the discussion about how to handle difficult conversations.
Don, can I make one quick comment?
Yes, please.
So I want to go back to that first question you asked about making the conversations more comfortable. We tend to look at these difficult conversations in the negative, and the reality is that some of the difficult conversations are in the positive. So more times we have the positive difficult conversations, it's going to help us with the negative conversations. But we tend to look at them always as negative.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you. That's a great closing comment. Yeah, look at the positive side of this. If you can get people out of their fears into what their hopes are, you've really changed the way their brains are functioning, and you'll get better results. That's a key element of coaching, something that you'll see if you look at icma.org/coaching and look at the one-on-one coaching guidelines for coaching activity. That's critical for helping people be their best. And that's really the whole purpose of the ICMA coaching program, is to help you be your best. And so we're eager to assist you in that and hope that you'll check out all the resources at icma.org/coaching and enjoy the opportunities to thrive in local government. Thanks very much for joining us today. Have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thrive in local government. Thanks very much for joining us today. Have a great day.